12 o'clock till 1 on Tuesdays. So I encourage people to tune in then. So this is From the Ground Up on CFRU 93.3.
Messenger, bird, plays, home, recordings, experimental, songwriters, and all manner of sounds from 20th century homes. This bird likes to dance. Please, please, please send your hi-fi, lo-fi, or no-fi recordings to messengerbird@cfru.ca and tune in every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. to 93.3 FM CFRU. New adventures in song.
Hello and welcome to another airing of Radio Cultural on 93.3 CFRU.
Today we are looking at the Aboriginal community in Guelph through the University of Guelph's Aboriginal Resource Centre, more commonly known as the ARC. We'll be listening to the Office of Intercultural Affairs' own program coordinator, Candace Stewart. She'll be interviewing Cara Wellkamp, ARC's student advisor and manager. So without further ado, let's listen to their interview and enjoy.
I met him on a powwow trail. He was singing and I was a dancer. To the heartbeat drum, heartbeat drum. Ah, hey, ah, oh. Long summer nights, falling in love. Don't ever want to part, don't ever want to say goodbye.
Benefits of our listeners today, please tell us about the Aboriginal Resource Centre, or ARC.
The Aboriginal Resource Centre is a unit within student life, and it's open to all students, staff and faculty, as well as the broader Guelph community. We're located in the Federal Building at 620 Gordon Street, and we have the whole first floor, which contains a student lounge, a computer lab, a kitchen, and a resource library. Our services that are for Aboriginal students include student advising and support, transition programs for first-year students to help their transition to university and university life, tutoring and study support, bursary and scholarship information. And generally, we also support the Aboriginal Student Association as they're also housed within our center. Our programs that are open for the whole community include cultural and traditional workshops, and we also have research support so that if a graduate student or an undergraduate student, faculty are doing a project on a specific topic that with Aboriginal people or about Aboriginal people, they can come and use our resource library. They can also come and talk to us about protocols, and they can interact with our visiting elders that come once a month. The center is staffed with three professional staff, myself as the manager, and I also act as the Aboriginal student advisor. Hilary Trudeau is our Aboriginal liaison and transition coordinator, so she is out recruiting students throughout the fall semester, and then she works with students to transition them into the university. And Natasha Smith is our Aboriginal program coordinator, and so she's working with all of the academic and traditional programming to support the students. We also have six work-study students that work within the center and three peer helpers, so that the frontline staff that most people interact with right away are our student staff, and I think it makes a welcoming atmosphere that way.
Tell us about your culture, and generally speaking, where do Aboriginal people reside in Canada?
In Canada, the term Aboriginal refers to three groups of people that include the First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people. And they really reside throughout the country, right across Canada. When you look at the population numbers, about half live in Ontario and BC. And over half of the Aboriginal people in Canada are actually urban. I think it's a bit of a misconception that they all live in First Nations communities. The population is also very diverse, and so I wanted to touch on that we often think of Aboriginal people sort of being one group with one culture, but when you break it down and look at First Nations people alone, there's over 630 First Nations communities across Canada, and they speak over 30 different languages. So there really is a lot of diversity, and it's hard to sort of talk about one group. But one way that if you're interested in Aboriginal culture, you might want to try to connect with people is at powwows. And powwows happen throughout the summer, but they will be continuing into September and October. And there's also the Canadian Aboriginal Festival, which is in Hamilton this year, and it's the last week in November. Usually it's scheduled. At these powwows, it's a great opportunity to see Aboriginal culture showcased in its variety of ways. There's a lot of vendors and there's a lot of organizations that all come together and have booths and they're sharing with the public. There's also a lot of dancing and drumming, and the dancers are dressed up in their regalia, so you get to see both traditional forms of regalia and modern forms of regalia, and the same with dancing. So you'll see some very traditional forms that were probably more historic, and then the modern versions of those dancing. There's also the Aboriginal Music Awards are usually held around that time, so there's a good showcase of Aboriginal music at the same time.
Well, I believe that many of us are still misinformed of the Aboriginal culture, and you brought up a pretty good point that not all Aboriginal people live on reserves. And so we'd like you to share some of the common misconceptions about your culture.
I think one of the things that I often come across is the fact that Aboriginal culture is often only talked about in history classes throughout Canada. So a lot of people have a view of Aboriginal people that really comes from a historic context, and they really don't always think of us as being a modern culture. There's a couple instances in my life where I've come across people who have sort of indicated that certain people aren't native enough, maybe. And I think it stems a bit from a romanticization of our culture, sort of the Indian princess, the stoic elder, the stoic warrior, and, you know, the loyal sidekick in films, that there's this expectation that as a cultural group, we're sort of always carrying that culture first, and that we're not modern people just trying to, you know, go to school and get an education or work our job. So sometimes it can be a real challenge to sort of get past those stereotypes when you tell someone that you're native and they're questioning how much. That's, I guess, another thing that you often hear because of native status and status cards, that people want to know and want you to qualify for them how Aboriginal you actually are or where you're from, when you don't readily hear that about other cultures. When somebody identifies with a certain culture, you don't often get the question, well, how much? But we do. Or, well, you don't look native. And again, I was talking about the diversity across the country. So it really is hard to look at someone and really pinpoint where they're from or what they should actually look like. We think back to those historic photos.
Hello, everyone. Hope you're enjoying the OIA radio show so far. This is Dinuka. Right now, we're going to be taking a break. We're going to be listening to some Aboriginal music. Aboriginal music is rich in tradition and spiritual meaning, which is a great example of Aboriginal culture itself. So the next song that we'll be listening to is called Gwando Day by Sweetwater Women. Hope you guys enjoy. Welcome back to the OIA's radio show. If you just tuned in, today we are looking at the Aboriginal culture in Guelph and in Canada in general. We just got back from listening to some really awesome Aboriginal music, but now let's go back to the interview with the Aboriginal Resource Centre's Carwell Camp.
I think another issue that's often touched on in the news is substance abuse and those really negative effects of colonization that Aboriginal people are still dealing with every day. But we don't often touch on why those abuses are happening. And we often don't qualify that with where are we moving to now? And the strength of the youth and our youth movements that are really trying to have a different life and have real strength, and those elders and adults that are really trying to heal from the effects of residential school that they have lived through, reclaiming culture if it was lost, reclaiming language if it was lost. And I think that's a really impressive movement that's happening throughout the country. Another misconception is that Aboriginal people live tax-free within the country. There are some specific situations where First Nations have tax exemption, but it isn't a broad statement that you can paint across the country, and it isn't all Aboriginal people. Again, that refers to three groups. And so it really is difficult sometimes when people say that, or around the university we often hear, well, Aboriginal people are lucky because their education is paid for, so they don't have to worry about it. And that's another misconception. There is some funding for First Nations and Inuit education, but it basically has been one amount for quite a number of years, and it really doesn't fill the need of what is actually out there in Aboriginal students hoping to come to school. The communities have to split that money down into the amount of students that they do have. So some students might get support for just textbooks, where others might get tuition. And if they're really lucky, they might get some housing allowances as well. But again, that's First Nations and some Inuit students. It's not the whole Aboriginal population. And the majority of Aboriginal students are still looking for money to support their education, just like non-Aboriginal students are.
So you mentioned that some Aboriginal people have status cards. Would those without status cards be also Aboriginal?
Aboriginal people without status cards aren't considered Aboriginal to the federal government in the same ways that First Nations people with status cards are. There are also Inuit beneficiary cards, and there are Métis cards that are distributed by the Métis organizations of each province. But all of the different cards give people different amounts of recognition. The federal government's cards for First Nations people and Inuit people do have some of that support for healthcare and funding for education, but that also limits them in some ways because healthcare is normally a provincially recognized service, and they are one of the only populations that are cared for under the federal government. So it causes a little bit of governmental jurisdiction that's an issue. The people who don't have any status cards have real difficulty being recognized as an Aboriginal person, and I think it's really important that people are able to identify with their cultural group themselves, that they're culture and their identity isn't defined by a card that they have to carry in their wallet, but instead they have a sense of self identification for that. So it can be a real challenge. It does cause a little bit of animosity within communities, whether people have status cards or what type of cards they have. The Métis do have some recognition, and that allows them to harvest plants and allows them to harvest animals in different areas, but they don't have the same support for education and healthcare that First Nations and Inuit people do in other parts of Canada.
Just got back from town, where the bribes are paid, and they turn my offer down. They say the deal's already made, so now I gotta stand and watch while it all comes down, and the buzzards and the hawks, the judges and the mob circle round. Oh, I were the queen of all the world,
Who is eligible, who isn't, and what are the implications for those who don't have status cards?
Status cards are recognition from the federal government of First Nations heritage, and the eligibility gets quite complicated. Basically, the government has a bunch of different guidelines based on whether your parents have status cards. The Indian Act, which status cards are regulated under, originally had many problems with it, not that it doesn't today, but it still was, it was a very sexist document at the time. It also had a lot of bits about enfranchisement, whether that was whether you chose to go to school or join the Canadian military. So there's been a lot of changes to the Indian Act and who can get status cards, so it's quite complicated to just take any one case, but the government will look at everyone's case, whether your parents had status cards, whether one of your parents had a status card, and basically they decide whether you have enough First Nations blood to get a status card. And so I think that becomes problematic for people's identity. Whether you are eligible for a status card or not really shouldn't define whether you feel that you are First Nations or you are Aboriginal. But it does define it because of the way the general population looks at that status, that you're recognized by that piece of plastic. There also are Inuit beneficiary cards, which are given out by the government that are federally recognized as well. So they give the same sorts of supports and exemptions to different things that the First Nations status cards do. There are also Métis cards, but they are not as federally recognized as the other cards. They have come in support of other government decisions to support harvesting rights for Métis people and the need for support under some of the treaties that they have been part of. For people that don't have status cards, despite what their heritage is, whether they're mixed race or full-blood First Nations people, I don't think that we should worry about the card defining who we are. If you have that connection to your culture, I think you should be proud of your culture and celebrate that and not get bogged down by having status or not. Unfortunately, it does affect access to some programs, but there are many opportunities out there for Aboriginal people, First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people who don't have a card that defines them as such. And the Aboriginal Resource Centre at the University of Guelph and other University of Guelph programs, we've been trying to be very welcoming. We would like students to self-identify however they wish. If they identify with the term Aboriginal, First Nations, Inuit, Métis, even Native American, because there is still that ancestry, we didn't recognize the border, or we don't recognize the border as much because it wasn't there throughout Canada and the United States as their many nations. So I think it's really important that students understand that they're welcome to come to our programming, whether they have that experience with their culture or whether it's something that they're just developing and they're just searching out for. We welcome everyone regardless of their experience, and we're excited to share in their journey with them.
So this concludes our show for today. We hope you enjoyed our show, and for more information on what you've listened, please check our website at studentlife.uoguelph.ca/OIA. Thank you again for tuning in on 93.3 CFRU Radio Cultural. My name is Danuka, and we hope that you can join us again next week for another show.
Imagine the many things that require your signature in daily life. two out of five adults in Canada struggle with reading, writing, and numeracy, and other essential skills required for work, community participation, and lifelong learning. Action Read is a community-based nonprofit organization dedicated to improving these essential skills in adults in Guelph. Our volunteers offer personalized one-on-one tutoring to adults over the age of 19.